You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
Welcome to a special edition of the Princeton Lacks Cast. This is Jerry Price, and today I am joined not by Princeton's current head coach, Matt Matalon, but by one of Princeton's former head coaches, the Hall of Famer himself, Bill Tierney, who led the Tigers to six NCAA championships in his time here. Coach Tierney, welcome to the Tiger Lacks Cast.
Thanks, Jerry. Good to be back with you.
So let's talk a lot about your time at Princeton. We'll talk about your time at Denver. We'll talk about a whole bunch of subjects, but let's start with the alumni group at Princeton. It was their idea to have this podcast each week as a way of staying connected to the program, and I think what it does is it shows just how strong the alumni connection to Princeton is. And a lot of these guys are the guys who played for you, but many of them are guys who predated your time here. Talk a little bit about the Princeton alumni group and how strong that group is and what their loyalty to the program says to you.
Well, when I first got to Princeton in the late 80s, you know, one of the things that enticed me to come was obviously that the successful history of the lacrosse program. And number two was the passion that the alumni had for the team and for the program. And, one of my goals when I took that job was to hopefully develop, that passion in the groups that I was able to coach. And, there have been some great ones and who have then turned into great alumni. I remember me having to convince Dean Hargadon that to fill the last admission spot for our class of 1998 with either John Hess or another young person. And I told him that John Hess would be one of the greatest alumni ever if he admitted him. And certainly has turned out that way.
And John Hess has been one of the great supporters of Princeton lacrosse through the years, former president of the Friends Group. Let's talk about the current president of the Friends Group, who's Ed Calkins, who was a member of your first championship team back in 1992. And I think Ed, who was really the driving force behind a lot of the things that are going on now with the alumni group, what was he like when he was a player at Princeton? And just talk a little bit about that, not just Ed, but that first group that you had here, because, you know, famously you told them you'll be the ones who win the first national championship, and they did.
Well, Ed is a great, he's a great example of that whole group. You know, he was a guy that kind of everybody else thought was pretty good, and we thought was great. And the special part about Ed was that he's from Ithaca, New York, and we were able to steal him out from under the Cornell noses. And each one of those guys had a special story. A lot of them were looking at other places. A lot of them were overlooked. A lot of them changed position for us. So, a lot of them had chips on their shoulders that they weren't recruited by the big boys and all that other stuff. And, I think that the thing that strikes me and that I remember about Ed the most is that he, on February 1st, which was our first practice day in 1992, Ed dislocated his hip. And some doctors told him he may not walk right again. And on April 1st, he was back playing for us. And that just echoes the toughness and the tenacity and the passion that those guys had for their teammates and for the team and for the program itself. And it resonates through to this day in guys like Ed Calkins.
So that first championship was 25 years ago. That team would be honored at halftime on Memorial Day at the NCAA championship game. Does it seem like 25 years have gone by?
Only when I look in the mirror, but it seems like yesterday, and how blessed I feel to be. I've been a part of that thing, and it's special that group is being honored. It's a little scary to think about it because I was 40 at the time, but I think there'd be no better group to be there as the first one. Because it really was a group that overcame so many obstacles, was a mix of a lot of talent and a lot of heart. And I think it's one of the great things that the NCAA lacrosse committee does in honoring these 25-year groups.
Was there a moment, and maybe it was in 1991 or wasn't in the 92 season, but was there the one moment where you said to yourself, this is a championship team, this is a team I can definitely win it all with, or it just played out as the season went along?
No, absolutely. It was as I'll never forget walking off the field, Palmer Stadium, after losing in triple overtime to Towson in 1991, walking off the field. And Scott Bacigalupo saying to me, "Coach, we'll never lose an overtime game again." And I just remember that being kind of the it wasn't just about overtime. It was about the belief that that team had in themselves that we should have been better that year. Our results should have been better that year. When you look at the building of the program, people might not think that, but we really believed that. And we felt that with all the guys we had coming back the next year, we felt that we'd certainly be one of the favorites to take that championship.
This is also the 20th anniversary of the 1997 team that went a perfect 15-0 and won its own national championship. It's the, you know, it's a season that's a little more special because it was a perfect season. I know that you never want to lose a game anywhere along the line, but to have a perfect season like that, I would assume means a lot to you.
It really does. You know, when you think about early in that season, we had a couple of really tough early games and pulled them out. And then it just, interestingly enough, I was talking to Chris Brown last week, who was on that 97 team. And I'll never forget the morning of the championship game. It was in College Park, and it was an 11 o'clock a.m. game. And it was, we were up for our pregame meal at 7. And, you know, it was pouring rain. The rain was coming through into the restaurant where we were having our breakfast. And I'll never forget Beckett Wolf standing up at breakfast and just saying, "You know what, fellas, we're undefeated, but we haven't even come close to playing our best yet." And that thought was really resonated with me because he was right. And then, you know, the first 15 minutes of that game were the best maybe anybody's ever played in a championship game.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first 7 minutes of that first quarter were, you know, shots hitting the pipe and Maryland's goalie making some saves. Yeah. And you got the sense that this game was going to go one way or the other, that Maryland had either weathered the storm, gotten, you know, taken your best shot and it was still 0-0, or it was going to just eventually all cave in. And it went from 0-0 to 8-0 at the end of the first quarter. And I mean, I think that's about as perfect as a team can play. The entire first 15 minutes, really, even though the shots weren't falling, but then the last half of that first quarter building an 8-0 lead.
There's no question. It was remarkable. You know, I just remember everybody stepping up. You know, Craig Katz has 3 goals in that game, and Craig was a very good player, but he wasn't a big scorer. He wasn't a multiple goal scorer in games. And it just, everything just fell together for us that day. And everybody was on the same page. Everybody played great. And, you know, it's a, it capped off that, as you mentioned earlier, that so memorable season. It was fun, you know, just fun to be a part of that.
So, I mean, I look at the 6 national championships that you won here. You know, to me, 1992 was the first, so that'll always be special. 2001, the 6th, was the only one that you won with both of your sons, Trevor and Brendan, on the team. So that was, I think, the most emotional, at least the most emotional that I saw you. The 3 in 96, 97, 98 were sort of the dynasty dominance, you know, just the Hess, Hubbard, Massey, but so much more than those 3 guys. The 94 one, I think, is one that's a little bit forgotten by people, and I also think that it's one that, I think that that 94 championship did a lot to solidify that 92 wasn't just going to be a one-and-done type of thing. Do you agree? Or?
That's exactly right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think that was the statement for the year, you know, was just about that. Because the 94 guys really helped us in that 92 championship. You're talking about some of the greatest players that ever, you know, in my mind, that ever put on a Princeton uniform, and Kevin Lowe and Scott Bacigalupo and Scott Reinhart and those kind of guys. You know, that team, I think, had the most pressure of any of the championship teams, because honestly, we were expected to win it in my mind. Whereas in 92, we weren't, you know, 96, 97, 98, we were just so talented. Yeah, there was pressure each, especially to repeat and win the third one. But I thought that 94 team was one that after getting beat pretty well in the semifinals in 93, and losing David Morrow, you know, I thought that 94 team had the most pressure on it and handled it, really well, and even to the point where the last play of the last game turned out not being how we drew it up, but the calmness that Kevin Lowe showed by picking that ball off the ground and just depositing it in the goal kind of was poignant to how the season went and what the results had to be.
Now, one thing I always remember about that is that, you know, he's known as a feeder, and you know, he was one of the great feeders who ever played, and yet, you know, the signature moment was that goal that he scored probably in his career. You know, I mean, I could still see it. You know, he's, what is he, like 12 yards a little bit to the left of the goal, and, you know, like in his career, you know, how many times did he find himself in that spot? I mean, you know, almost never.
That's right. He was the guy who's going to have the ball on his stick. It just so happened that that game we were having some success with Jeff McBean inverting, and we felt that that was a good option for us because we knew that they would go heavy to Kevin if he got the ball. And, you know, Jeff got his hands free, and, you know, I don't know whether it was a bad pass or I know it just bounced through, and Kevin just so calmly just seemed to pick it up, and you knew he was going to score as soon as he picked it up.
So besides the on-the-field success, let's talk a little bit about your time at Princeton in terms of the growth of the sport. And I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to any of these podcasts, but I had Bryce on for one of them. And we talked about this, the growth of the sport of lacrosse in Mercer County, New Jersey, in the Princeton area, the Bucks County, Pennsylvania area, which is just across the river, during your time here at Princeton. And, you know, you can't go around here at all without seeing some kid with a lacrosse stick or lacrosse goals all over the place. And it wasn't the case when you came here. Was that a concern of yours when you came to Princeton, that lacrosse wasn't, as big a part of the culture of the area as it was where you're coming from? Obviously coming from Hopkins, where in Baltimore it was and still is huge. And then just talk a little bit about, you know, your impact on the sport itself here to the point of where it was when you got here and where it was when you left. And I know you're not going to take credit for this, but a lot of the credit does have to go to you.
Well, first of all, you know, admittedly, I wasn't concerned about lacrosse not being the centerpiece of Princeton, New Jersey at the time. But I was concerned that my two sons, who were 6 and 8 at the time, had already played 2 years of lacrosse in Baltimore, and there was none to be found. Very quickly, out of the darkness came Greg Rashdorf, who was running the Hopewell Valley Youth Lacrosse Program, you know, on a shoestring and, you know, found a way for my kids to be into that program, even though we didn't live over there. And so that allayed a lot of the fears there. I wasn't worried about, one of the reasons that Princeton's such a great place for so many reasons, but in the lacrosse world, is that it's kind of in the center of everything. You're an hour and a half, from Long Island, you're 2 hours from Baltimore, you're an hour from Philly, you're, you know, all those things came into play. And then and we knew we could get great New England prep school kids. Of course, interestingly enough, I'd already had a Colorado kid on our team at Chris McHugh and continued to recruit those guys as time went on. But I think I wasn't as worried about that as I was for making sure that my two sons had a place to play. And, you know, when you talk about the growth of the game and the growth of lacrosse in Princeton, I think that was a natural evolution of what was happening with our program. And, those were the days where you could have lacrosse camps with 350 kids in them, and you could really teach them for a week. And kids wanted to learn the basic rudiments of the game, not just play 4 tournament games in a weekend, you know. And there was enthusiasm in the coaching ranks, which there still is in different ways. Our players worked our camps. Our players were great role models as young men and as students. I mean, what better place could you go to school and say, hey, you can be a great lacrosse player and a great student than Princeton? And so I think all of those things kind of came together. As I mentioned before, the fact that the program had a great history of lacrosse, you know, there was championships in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. And it fell on some hard times, you know, in the early 80s. But, we knew we could bounce that back. But the fact that there was history, there was great alumni support, there was great financial support, people wanted it to be good again. And there's just so many factors that made the growth of the game in New Jersey and in that area, and eventually to other places. You know, as you mentioned, I get far too much of the credit for that. I just happen to be the guy that was in the center of the universe of a perfect storm.
Another guy who was with you in that universe here at Princeton was David Metzbauer, who was your assistant coach for the six NCAA championships for 20 years here, 22 years here. And no, Metzi was here for 20 years with you. Now at the University of North Carolina, where he won a national championship most recently a year ago. Where did you find Metzi? What brought him to Princeton with you? Was he somebody you had known? And what did you see from him early on where you knew that this was a guy who was special?
Well, it took me a little while to know he was special until he kind of got with me. But Metzi was going to get out of coaching. He had been the assistant coach at Delaware. I was working the Bob Scott lacrosse camp in Baltimore, which I had been commissioned to work before I took the Princeton job and felt that I had to fulfill that obligation. And I met Metzi at the Gilman School because Bob Schillinglaw said, you know, if you got an opening here, Bob Schillinglaw, having been the head coach at Delaware.
Stepping down this year.
Retired. Yeah. And, you know, he said, just talk to this guy. Talk him into staying in coaching. And Metzi was going to go come back to Baltimore and be a roofer. And, you know, I just sat in the stands at Gilman. It was hot as heck. And just kept saying to Metz, come with me. You'll be my first assistant. I'll give you the total offense. And you can do what you want. I promise you, if we work together, we'll get great kids. And I just honestly thought, took him because people said great things about him. It didn't take long after that, watching him recruit that fall and watching him coach our team that fall, who finally had some good players in it, just some of those guys we had brought in, you know, the 92 guys and the 93 guys. He first came and watched him go to work that fall. Then I realized what a special guy I had, and it's gone all the way through to this day, including this past weekend, where he gets a team to go from 6-7 to 8-7, and now being one of the favorites to win a national championship. The guy is special. He deserves as much or more credit for those championships as I. And you know, I got another guy here in Denver named Matt Brown who reminds me so much of Metzi in their loyalty and their hard work and their willingness to stay in the shadow of a guy who gets all the accolades and doesn't deserve them all.
Let's talk a little bit about the current Princeton head coach, Matt Matalon, who, when he got the job, the permanent job, one of the very first things he did was to call you and to connect with you and to understand that you know, the importance of building that relationship in terms of his own development as a coach, and then also in terms of the alumni here and the support that they give, and the esteem that they hold you in. So, what have you seen so far from Coach Matalon?
Well, you know, even not just what I saw was the last, I think it was three, maybe four games of last season when he had to take over. I watched a team rally around him, and to me, look, you know, as I, you've heard me say this 1,000 times, and I'll continue to say it, that if lacrosse coaching was rocket science, none of us would be doing it. You know, Matt has come in and he's gained the respect and the enthusiasm for his team. The X's and O's part, he's done a great job, number one, of hiring a great staff. Number two, they're playing a style that's well-conditioned for their talent, which is the number one sign in my mind of any great coach. You know, some of these coaches that just have their system and knock everybody into it, you know, even though I was one of those guys, you know, don't become as successful as the guys who understand their talent, understand what they're all about, and are able to be flexible with that. I just love Matt's enthusiasm. I love his love for Princeton. And I'm watching him recruit. I'm watching him coach these young guys, and I'm seeing the potential for this thing to be great.
We'll let you go in a few minutes. I know you're busy, and you obviously have the heart of your season coming up now with the Big East tournament this weekend in Providence, and then the NCAA tournament beyond that. It's the Ivy League tournament for Princeton. The Tigers will play Friday at 3:30 against Brown. That game in New Haven, Connecticut. Tigers are the second seed. Brown is the third seed. top seed is Yale. The fourth seed is Penn. The championship game is noon on Sunday. The winner will get the Ivy League's automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. Just before we let you go, though, just talk a little bit about your program in Denver, the way it's been received in the community out there. I was out there last year, and you know, it's sellouts, and it's you know, it's an event every time Denver has a game at home. And just talk a little bit about, you know, where your program is and how much you, I mean, I know you love it out there. So, you know, just talk a little bit about what you see from the Pioneers.
Well, first of all, when I came out here, Jerry, as you know, it was you know, whenever I've left the program, I've always had two important aspects of that I leave the program, the cupboard full, and I leave the program better than I found it. And I felt like when I left Princeton, it was just, again, another selfish decision that was my time to try and to take on a new challenge. When I got to Denver, I was totally surprised. You know, our AD here, Peg Bradley Dapis, she convinced me to come here and promised me that they would give me all the support I needed. And they've done that and more. So we have a great stadium, very much like 1952 Stadium in Peter Barton Stadium. We have great fan support. The beauty here, honestly, is that there is no football. So there's hockey and lacrosse. And, you know, last week at our last home game, we had, you know, 500 students at a lacrosse tailgate, you know. And so we have the youth program going. We've got our parents. We've got our alumni. And we've got student support. So with those four groups, we've been able to really make our home game something special events. And so I think with our success and our notoriety on TV, and certainly the championship 2 years ago, has helped, you know, make it a little bit more of a mainstream sport here in Denver. You know, when you do something in Denver, you're on ABC, CBS, NBC, you know, it's not just a local cable channel. So they support at college athletics here, especially at DU, in a big, big way. And so, again, I've been blessed to be a part of another perfect storm that just needed a little tweaking. You know, I had my son Trevor on my staff for the first 4 years, and we were able to win a national championship together, which will always remain very, very special, you know, to me, that experience. And as I mentioned earlier, I've had Matt Brown with me for 8 years, and Matt's a special young man who someday will be the head coach here at Denver. But it's been kind of a resurgent and a recharging of my batteries. Other than what you can hear in my voice right now, I've actually been very healthy over the 8 years, and feel really good at 65, and feel like I signed a 7-year contract 2 years ago. So at least have 5 more years in this thing, and feel like that. It's Denver, very much like Princeton when I took over there, was just ripe for a little bit of culture change, and one that I knew would be an exciting and successful one, as they both turned out to be.
Coach Tierney has been our guest this week on a special edition of the Princeton Laxcast. I wish Coach Tierney luck in the upcoming Big East tournament, and then in the NCAA tournament beyond that. Would love to see Princeton and Denver be half of the Final Four up at in Gillette Stadium Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully, you know, things will align and that'll come to be. Whatever does happen, you know, Coach Tierney, 6 NCAA championships here, 1 at Denver. Neither program had an NCAA tournament win prior to his arrival. It is not a coincidence that these things have happened. You know, for my money, the greatest lacrosse coach of all time. And also has touched so many people in the sport, not just the guys who've played for him, but people who've played against him. You know, coaches, so many people who have gone on to do so many great things, and so many Princeton people who listen to this podcast each week, and you know, they just really owe so much to what Bill Tierney has meant to them. And of course, we appreciate that he has stayed close to the Princeton program and that he still cares about the Tigers, and we thank him again for being with us here today.
Thanks so much, Jerry. It's great to catch up, and you know, just to be able to say hello to all those great Princeton guys out there, and you know, just I'm thankful for your words and for having been a part of that for 22 great years. And I do continue to think of it. It's a very special part of my life, obviously, and continues to be.
So good luck to Denver. They play in the Big East tournament. As I said, once again, it's Princeton against Brown. That game will be Friday at 3:30. You can see it on ESPNU. You can listen to it on WPRB FM 103.3. If you're in the Princeton area, you can listen to it on the link on the webpage. If you are outside of the area, the Tigers play Brown as the second seed. The top seed is Yale. They will play Penn, the fourth seed. The championship game for the Ivy League tournament will be Sunday at noon. And, you know, really exciting time for Princeton lacrosse. And once again, thanks to Coach Tierney for being with us today. And thanks to all the people who have been listening all year for their support. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Princeton LaxCast. Thanks.